Welcome again to another episode of the Open Paddock Podcast. Joining you as always is Sean and Mike. Mike, say hello to everybody.
Good evening, everyone.
Yes, and now go back to the cage. Just kidding. So, Mike, busy weekend for Labor Day. Did you do anything fun?
Yeah, I had a very busy Labor Day weekend doing things other than going to Kentucky, unfortunately. It's just the way it goes. Budgetary decisions had to be made, and Kentucky was left off the list. And several people, might I add, also did that, because attendance this year was quite down.
Yes, yes. It looked a little empty in the stands. Did you watch any college football? As you know, last year we would talk about college football.
Yes,
did you watch your Broilers be unfortunately down by Notre Dame?
Yes, I did. Unfortunate turn of events. Yeah. But it is what it is. Yeah. And the Broilers go on to face Central Michigan or St. Mary's School of the Blind.
Nice.
Next week, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
There's some upside in Purdue's quarterback combo with Marv. And the other guy, the true freshman that they have.
Oh, yeah.
Very different styles, and could be interesting to see what they do with that, mixing up the offense this year. But it would appear that they didn't have much of a running game, so boiler down.
My Volunteers throttled Tennessee Martin, for what it's worth. I think it was like 50-0. However, I think my office is about this. The population of my office is about the same population as it goes to Tennessee Martin. In fact, if you blink, you'll miss it.
Nice.
So, yay! But this weekend we get to look forward to NFL. My Jets play, your Colts play, and we shall discuss it next week as to who does well, and then also our fantasy football teams take the field. So, there it is.
Fantasy football. It's on. We get Thursday for the kickoff of the season, and it should be a decent game with Minnesota and New Orleans. So,
definitely.
Get your fantasy. A fantasy reminder to everybody, the first game is Thursday. Get your picks in.
Yes, yes. Please have your rosters ready by Thursday. Morning, or you will suffer the wrath of getting destroyed.
Consult your bookie.
Yes. Mine is on speed dial. So,
and that said, we will go right into around the world in the world of motorsports as we know it.
Which was only one race, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, pretty much. I mean, that was the only race we had this weekend was the IndyCar race, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the only thing really going on. There was a Moto 2 race this weekend, we won't get into it too much, but that's two deaths in two weekends in MotoGP support classes.
Yep.
And it's very sad.
Yes, it is. We did have those going on, but on a somewhat brighter note, we will talk about IndyCar. As we did have the Kentucky race, similar to the, what is it? It's a little bit similar, but not quite to like Texas in terms of layout.
I think it's most closely Kansas.
Okay, Kansas. Okay.
Most closely Kansas. You know, a lot of the same features, a lot of the same banking, very similar tracks in many respects. SMI bought that couple of years back and has been putting money into it. The track looks a lot better than it did 2 years ago. It's losing some of its hominess, though. That nice giant grass hillside that you could park on and tailgate on is gone. It's now a crushed stone parking lot.
Oh, nice. And,
anyway.
Well, I would say that before you can race, you have to qualify. But as we discussed last week, we don't say that anymore. But the cars did have to grid up. As it were. That's what we'll call it, gridding up. And
yeah, qualifying had all kinds of interesting stories going on. Yes. We won't go into all of them, but
one
first
that,
and Yeah, first and foremost is the poll.
You know, I knew as soon as... See, I'm driving, and I'm waiting to come home and watch this on television, and Mike just decides that now is as good a time as any for a spoiler.
Oh, no!
And texts me the results of qualifying and calls it a quality spoiler, one that was worthy of being spoiled. And it was Ed Carpenter, yeah, Ed Carpenter on pole position. Your pick to win the race is starting first place.
Yeah, and you have to know that my pick for Ed Carpenter to win the race was very tongue-in-cheek. It was what I wanted, but I wouldn't necessarily say I expected Ed to win the race. But the fact that he came out, the Panther came out with Ed in first and Dan in third in qualifying, it was just phenomenal. That's two weekends in a row that Panther has shown strong on an oval. At least the start of the weekend was showing strong. Mm-hmm. That said, the other team that showed strong in qualifying in the race at Chicago was Andretti Green, or Andretti Autosport, I should say. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have such a smooth time at qualifying.
No, Ryan Briscoe. I'm not Ryan. What the hell? I'm high. Yeah.
Yes,
Ryan Hunter. Ryan Hunter Ray would end up actually crashing his qualifying attempt, and that would put him out. And then Tony Kanaan, who had a similar setup to that of Hunter Ray, would get massive adjustments before his run, and he nearly put it in the wall.
Yeah.
And he obviously, after almost crashing, you're not going to have a great run, and he ended up starting 26th with Hunter Ray as well at a 210 average speed. Milka was at 213.
Yeah, Milka one-upping Graham Rahal. You have to say Graham was in 25th, Milka was in 24th. Graham coming in a full mile an hour slower than Milka Duno. Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Jay Howard.
No. Not now. Not after that.
Yeah, indeed. Graham went on to have a passable showing in the race, but really it goes to show it wasn't. Yeah.
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 That car is awful.
Indeed.
Well, there was a surprise in qualifying as well. Not only the performance of the two top tier Andretti Autosport cars, or even that of the slower back of the pack cars, but it should be mentioned that Conquest, wow, where did Bertrand Baguette come out at sixth place in qualifying and Thomas Schechter in 10th?
Yeah, gonna have to say that Mr. Baguette, he's got to be around next year.
Yeah.
This guy has shown well. You know, he comes in with a funny French name, thinking it's something you could buy at the lunch counter. and suddenly, the guy's showing well. He's showing that maybe he just does deserve to belong here. Out qualifying Thomas Schechter, who was doing a one-off for Conquest, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Because Thomas is good at the ovals.
Yeah, indeed. He wrecks it.
Yeah, until he wrecks it and then whines about it. And then we also had, we had Franchitti in 11th. So, I mean, for Bertrand to out-qualify the Ganassis and the other Penske cars, the Ganassi car of Franchitti and the other Penskes, I mean, that was something for that team, as well as Hideki Muto was fifth place in that lowly Newman Haas ride. So,
yeah. Now I'm going to throw something out, and you're going to be shocked because you probably haven't heard about it yet.
Okay.
One of the storylines this weekend that nobody reported on that I saw, except Trackside Online, was that a certain team that happens to have four cars, they were caught with an illegal part this weekend.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I guess Andretti. Now this is what Trackside is basically able to gather, and they say that they think this is what it is, but they haven't received official confirmation. So if you're a member of Andretti Autosport and would like to refute said allegations, please feel free to drop us a line.
Yeah, drop me an email, please.
But supposedly they came with an illegal underwing for the cars. And they, interesting. It sounds like the IndyCar series saw it at Chicago and didn't like it. And I'm not quite sure exactly how it went. It sounds like maybe they were told not to bring it again, and they tried it, and yeah, they failed pre-race tech and had to take it off.
Wow.
So not quite sure all that goes into this, but it does bring up the question, when teams do stuff like this, it's really good for the fans to know about it. It's not a matter of, this seems to be the idea of the current administration. It seems to be changing because we did hear a lot about Elio's penalty. We did hear about, the suspension or the probation of Milka Duno and very harsh terms that they put out for her. We did hear, some of the penalties and everything that have been going on this year, not a whole lot. But before this year, we never heard any of that.
Yeah,
it was all done behind the scenes. Certain people in the Indy Racing League administration felt that it was damaging to the teams, to to their potential sponsor capabilities and things like that, to let on that they were getting their wrists slapped.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, I would much prefer to know when a team is doing things illegally.
Right.
I think it gives more flavor to the sport.
More flavor to the sport, and I think the fans kind of have a right to know as well. I mean, it was lambasted when Waltrip Motorsports or Michael Waltrip's team was trying to run like JP8 fuel in their NASCAR.
Nice.
It was like, yeah, we're going to put jet fuel in our car. I mean, it may not have been that extreme. It may have just been additives of, but everybody knew, and that was embarrassing for them. But I mean, you're right. Fans have a right to know. We need transparency in those things.
Yeah, and, the ways you can cheat in IndyCar are far more exotic than, trick spring rubbers in NASCAR. Just stick something in the carburetor.
Yeah, right.
Seriously. So, I don't know. I just don't like the stance that you hide it from everybody.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what was going on this weekend. I guess Paul Tracy was they got some quotes on Trackside Online from Paul Tracy that he was just ragging on Andretti Autosport. I guess he saw a Andretti Autosport crew member, so he asked him, "So how's that that new underwing working?"
Nice.
And I guess the guy responded with a certain something new.
Nice.
So something was going on there. Confirmed by Paul Tracy, investigative reporter for the IndyCar series, because nobody else does it.
Nice. Well, TK would start towards the back, but he did assure us on Twitter that he would pass 11 cars on the first lap. And he came close, because come race time, he passed 10 on the first lap.
And on the post race, he apologized to the Twitter fans.
Yeah,
for like, not making it to 11. He said close.
But again, the race would go on, and an interesting thing would happen, as most of the front runners, because who was it? Carpenter, Weldon, who else was it? Willpower. Those guys ran up front all race long.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
They were the class of the field. Briscoe looked all right, but until he crashed. But Carpenter, Weldon, maybe Kanaan, Andretti was looking racy again, and also Will Power, who led 83 laps of said number of laps for the race. That's another great showing for him on the ovals, but they would all be outclassed because of a really awkward kind of situation where all the front-running cars were nearly out of gas with four laps to go, and some cheeky pit strategy from Helio Castroneves would allow him to actually go ahead and take the win with only leading seven laps.
Yeah, oof, that.
kind of an ugly finish, though, if you think about it. A real kick in the stomach to the Panther boys.
Yeah, I think a kick in the stomach all around, because there are a lot of people watching this race that were just unsettled and unhappy with what they saw. Nobody likes a fuel mileage race. You get them every now and then. It's an accepted part of the sport. People can complain about it all they want, but what are you going to do? Go to fuel mandated fuel windows like they did in Champ Car? I don't think so. I think that's hokey. I think it's a gimmick. I think what you do is you tighten up the pit regulations. You tighten up the windows these guys have on pit lane for small deals, like a minor brush against the wall, equipment on the track, whatever. You just throw a yellow, the cars all bunch up, but you don't open the pits.
Yeah.
You know, do things like that so that, the integrity of the race is preserved instead of, running them all down pit lane. But, with Castro Neves, he came into pit. They held him for an additional 10 seconds. This was in a green flag stop or a yellow flag stop.
Yeah.
They held him for a little bit longer because they didn't think they got the wheel nut on one of the tires. And then they let him go. And by that time, he was already at the back of the pack. He wasn't running well all night.
No.
And by that time, he was at the back of the pack. So anyway, before they went green, they brought him in and tanked him up so he could go a little longer. And it ended up being the move of the race because he was able to nurse at home when everybody else had to do 59 laps on a tank. He was sitting there with much, much less, much less laps to go. And he just had to make a little fuel to make it work.
Yep.
So.
Well, regardless, that is, it doesn't really do a whole lot for Castro Neves in the championship. But what it does do is takes away some valuable points from the likes of Frank Keady, who would end up finishing fifth place, with Will Power being eighth after that hole. And again, now, I know we talked earlier in the week, you and I, about Will Power running on the ovals, and we both kind of agreed that he had, because Dario had some not so nice things to say about the way he had been driving on the oval, thought he was crazy, had a screw loose. But what happened, and it's happened twice, but we said, that's what a championship driver needs to do to win. You need to push the issue when you're on tracks that you're not good at, and you need to try to take the win. Well, it almost caught up to him yet again, as he almost put it in the wall during the, 140-ish pit stops, I think, lap 140-ish. He nearly puts it in the wall there and takes himself out again. I mean, all right, there's a point to drive. In my opinion, there's a point to be said about people who drive, like that on those particular tracks. But, dude, I mean, that's twice now. You've almost thrown the championship away.
Yeah, seriously, he's about ready to Briscoe himself out of the championship here.
When we are going to Motegi, so.
Yes, indeed, indeed. I mean, for Will Power, though, he ended up having a good race. Things went well for him throughout the night until the last pit exchange, and something was off in the car, and he dropped through the pack. Ended up finishing, eighth, I think?
Eighth for Power.
Yeah, so interesting. Frank Keady ended up finishing fifth, and that makes a difference in the championship. 17th, I believe. Yeah, 17 points is the difference in the championship. So clearly things are tightening up with two races to go that favored Dario. Interesting. That said, look at Target's results on the last two mile and a half ovals.
Well, yeah, those are tracks that they're supposed to dominate.
Yeah, and they really haven't been that good, except for the gamble they made at Chicago with Dario. I mean, they're basically as a queen's gambit. I mean, they put the pawn out there for it to be taken, and it ended up working out for them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and again, if you're Ganassi, though, you want to win a championship, obviously, as that is the name of the game. But that means that you need to win the tracks that you are really good at.
Mm-hmm.
And and you are in fact not winning the tracks that you are good at. You are finishing mediocre at best, or getting extremely lucky on an extremely gambly call. But yeah, you know, especially with Motegi, you need to finish ahead. You need to win.
Yeah, I the one thing I will say about Motegi, I've already said it. I think this one suits Power more than it does Franchitti, because it is such a varied oval. You know, yeah. it's something of a little bit of a road course. I mean, people consider Indy a four corner road course.
Nice.
Some do, at least.
Yeah.
And Motegi kind of is built in that same vein, because no corner, you know, the two ends of the track are different radiuses. So makes for an interesting race. And usually strategy plays heavily into that one.
Yes. So,
not an engineering track, more of a driver's track. But, well, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, looking through the results of the race, though, it does have to be noted some of the incidents from the race. Lap one. Oh my goodness.
I feel so bad for this guy.
I know, man. You just spoke with him.
I know, and it kills me inside.
Yeah, Takuma Sato, he wiggled in turn four and just went right into the wall.
It was over
all
that quick.
By myself.
And then EJ Viso, another KV car, he would break down. And then, all right, and now I'm going to – he would break down just to add to Conquest – or not Conquest. Jeez, yeah. I'm off of it. The KV racing KV woes. But this is the incident that really made me bad. You have Vitor Mira, Ryan Briscoe, and Simona Di Silvestro. This all takes place, what is it, about lap 79-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
And Di Silvestro is a lap down, and instructed during driver's meeting, it was said that lapped cars will go to the bottom of the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
Hug the white line, and the faster car will go around on the outside. And mm-hmm. So this is what happens. Briscoe and Mira get a huge run going down the back straightaway on Di Silvestro.
Mm-hmm.
Then, goes to the bottom of the course as was instructed. And then Vitor Mira does one of the most kamikaze moves I've ever seen and throws it really low. I'm talking below the apron low. And then clips Di Silvestro's car, who then goes up and clips Ryan Briscoe and sends him hard into the wall. They said that this Di Silvestro, the second hit for her on the inside was the harder of the hits, which I could kind of tell because the outside hit didn't look too awfully bad. Briscoe, he had a bruised foot. And then also Vitor Mira would suffer heavy damage as well in the ABC AJ Foyt Enterprises car. And that move, in my opinion, was completely unnecessary.
It, you know, when you are dealing with lap traffic, it is always a good idea to show great caution when you're going around them.
Yeah.
This situation was not a good situation at all, because Vitor had a run on Briscoe at mm-hmm. the time, and he was trying to slingshot around him underneath when they came up on Simona. Simona was not at the bottom of the track when they came upon her, but then moved down as Vitor also was trying to pass her on the bottom. It made for an interesting event because everybody was trying to blame everybody else. You read the commentators on it, and they're pointing fingers both ways. I think in the end it does come out to a racing incident, but I would have to say, Vitor, you don't put your car there.
No. I mean, it looked like he was below the apron. Now, my question is where was the spotter when all this is going on? Because if you're about to blow by another guy only to run right into the back of a lapped car, I mean, why was he not told, hey, 78 car, you're catching fast, you know, save the momentum, or, you know, roll out of the throttle and try again once you get around? Because, you know, it was just an unnecessary risk. I mean, wherever, you know, even if she wasn't right on the white line, I mean, when he dove under, I mean, you know, you got cars going all around you with so much more momentum. It's going to be mm-hmm. tough, you know, to get there. to the bottom like that without having a problem. And then if you stay in the middle of the track, you're the, you know, you get blamed because you're in the middle of the track. So, yeah. You know, it was a lose-lose situation, and they were all blaming. I think the only person who didn't really, well, I think Vitor was more on a defensive stance more often an offensive one. I think he was kind of like, I don't know what happened, but it wasn't me. He's like, I was just trying to get around.
Yeah, look at the wheel nuts. I was I was alongside, and that's where her front wheel hit me. He said so. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know,
what a mess.
Six of one, half dozen of another. Unfortunately, ending the day for Simona, Vitor, and Ryan Briscoe, all ends in tears. And you know, these mile and a half ovals, it's part of the game on these tracks.
Yep.
Things happen too quickly. Situations develop too quickly for a spotter sometimes to even be able to communicate what's going on the track.
Yeah, and that could be.
Yeah, that makes it difficult, you know, and you can only watch your mirrors so much. But, you know, the unfortunate part of the situation is, you know, Simona was kind of out of position to be lapped, and that made it a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. That was, you know, as far as conflagrations go, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, that was the big one. Excuse me. Goodness. I'm sorry. So,
watch, you know, like you said, watching the dicing at the front, you know, Ed Carpenter was up there. Dan Weldon was up there. You had the, you know, Willpower up there for a while. Just all that was going on at the front of the pack. Panther held their own at this track very well. They were the dominant cars. It would be very easy to say Panther had the best car on the track.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they did. They were always towards the front and pushing.
You know, I was sitting there thinking, wow, you know, Ed Carpenter's kind of drifting back through the pack. But it ended up he was able to make one more lap than everybody else on fuel. So he came in at the end of the race. He came in on like lap 195, 196, where everybody else had pitted the lap before.
Yeah.
All the other guys in contention for the win. And, you know, Carpenter was able to stay out one more lap, and that put him at the point. But unfortunately, it was behind Elio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were close.
Yeah, I was close. I feel really good for Ed Carpenter. It's just unfortunate that we'll get into Panther here shortly because Weldon had some comments after the race that pretty much made everybody think he's on the outs at Panther. It was speculated. Some people call it the worst kept secret the paddock, but it's been known for a while that Panther is not happy with Weldon, mainly because they're paying him a bunch of money and they're not getting the results they think they should be getting for paying for a driver when they can go out and have, you know, a driver pay them.
Nice. That's hilarious. Mm. They are running into a difficult time, decision-making time, really. I sent out a retweet earlier saying that they had a, you know, that because the rumor had it that Graham Rahal was going to be, you know, was like the number one guy to go there. But Panther says that, you know, that's not true. They said, we're still looking at Weldon. Mm-hmm. Weldon still has a possibility of being with the team next year.
I think that, that may just be some positioning from Panther because, let's be blunt. This situation's kind of boiled to a head for a while, and it's only the last week that they've had good results.
Nice.
And the team can pretty easily say the good results are more a function of how we've been able to develop the car than how Dan Weldon is performing behind the driver's seat because they could go out and hire Ed Carpenter, who hasn't driven at all this year except for Indy, and get fantastic results out of him.
Oh yeah.
The sentimental favorite for that seat would be an American because of the National Guard sponsorship. Yeah. With all signs pointing to that remaining. You would love to see an American take that seat. You're not going to see, you know, as much as I would love it, you're not going to see Ed Carpenter unless that's a 1.5 car team.
Yeah.
Because Ed Carpenter is only going to be able to compete on the ovals. I'm sure he would argue otherwise, but really, let's be blunt. You know, he's basically Sarah Fisher with testosterone.
Nice. So. Well, SpeedTV.com has got a poll, and this is who they think. Well, they give you some options of who they think may fit, and they've got Dan Weldon,
mm-hmm.
Ed Carpenter,
mm-hmm.
Graham Rahal, J.R. Mm-hmm. Hildebrand, Justin Wilson, Paul Tracy, Brian Hunter Ray, and Simona DiSilvestro, all as, you know, these, I guess, yeah. are the ones that they would like to see, or maybe Marshall Pruitt has gotten some kind of otherwise, or maybe they just reached in and drew some names out of a hat, but that's what we're looking at.
they drew some names out of a butt.
Nice. Nice.
Look, rabbit.
Yeah. Yay! Well, you know, I said earlier in the week, you know, if I could have it my way, which I never will in IndyCar racing, but if I could have it my way, I would want Dan Weldon, Ed Carpenter, and then I would open up a third car for a road guy, for Graham Rahal, making a Panther 3-car team, because that's how much I like them. I like them enough for them to have 3 cars. I wish they would. And I think that all 3 of those guys deserve, you know, obviously deserve drives. Graham Rahal does, even though
yeah.
he's kind of rubbed a little bit this year the wrong way with me, but not his fault. He got screwed over, and that's just the way it goes. And he has a right to be bitter about it. But, and then also, I like Dan Weldon. I think he's a great driver. He's made some progress on the road courses. Not enough, obviously, to maybe keep his job, but he's made progress. And then, obviously, Ed Carpenter. I mean, I know I gave you a lot of crap last week about picking him to win the race. But, you know, I mean, to be honest, you're right. He's done brilliantly on the ovals this year. And, I mean, to secure pole position, even while other teams are in the middle of a title fight,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's impressive. I mean, the boy has come a long way, and you were right in saying that his pit crew would screw him over, because they in fact did on cue. they messed geez. Up and, you know, pretty much took him out of contention until, you know, obviously he finished second. But I mean, you know, he was really kind of lucky that he got the pit draw the way it was, because I mean, you know, he had fallen back there to like 8th place, you know, was hanging out in the lower portion of the top 10 there as well for some of the race, because his crew's just terrible. I mean, yeah, they're just awful.
Well, when you take guys off the street who haven't been doing it all season, you know, it certainly shows.
Oh, yeah.
Now, some of those guys may have been, you know, guys from Vision who really haven't been doing anything for a while. And the fact of the matter is, if you've got guys that are decent at what they do, well, they're on the other teams because they're full-time jobs. You know, I hate to say that kind of stuff. You know, it's just the truth of the matter. I mean, you look at Penske. Penske saw the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and they assembled a who's who of Penske pit guys. They were calling it the Penske All-Star Team on the race broadcast for Will Power's car, because they didn't want a similar situation that happened at Chicago to happen again.
Nice.
The fuel rig. So they you know, got guys from Elio's car, and they got guys from Briscoe's car, and they threw them all together, and the captain wants to win this one, and Ganassi's been rubbing his nose in the dirt for a while, so we'll see how that goes.
He is trumped. Ganassi has trumped Penske in every form of racing that they compete in.
Certainly this year, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, he's just beating him lifeless.
until Ganassi has the pedigree that Roger has at Indy, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, 10 tops, really?
Yeah, you're right.
Argue that.
Yeah! Go NASCAR!
They've got Danica Patrick trading cards.
Nice. That's ridiculous. Well, yes. We got some other news, because this week it was announced that Well, this race, it was
But
announced.
can I carry on one last thing on the discussion about Panther?
No.
Yeah,
Just kidding.
indeed. I think it's pretty unlikely Dan Weldon's back.
Oh, I think so.
It just sounds sour grapes are there. Where does Dan Weldon go? He's been everywhere in the paddock. I mean, he hasn't raced for Penske, but Penske doesn't have any openings right now unless they want to can Briscoe. And if they can
Could
Briscoe,
be.
I think there are a lot better options than Dan Weldon. I thought Panther was a perfect fit for Weldon because he is an oval specialist, and Panther, till now they've excelled at ovals, and that's pretty much it. Ed Carpenter, like I said, he's an itinerant driver. He's not going to be able to accomplish the full season. Graham Rahal is a feel-good pick, and I would prefer to see him there than nowhere. But there's a lot of talk that Daddy Rahal is putting together a team for him for next year. J.R. Hildebrand is the guy that jumps off that list at me. Maybe it doesn't happen. Probably doesn't happen. I mean, when you want to see something, it never does.
Nice.
Ryan Hunter Ray, Ryan Hunter Ray's not in the discussion. He's going to be at Andretti next year because Andretti can actually put together sponsorship programs, unlike everybody else in the freaking paddock.
You know where I think that Weldon could go, though?
Well, I think that a certain KV Racing is going to have a lot of openings next year.
Yes. He can go there. And the team is not bad. The
No, the
team is
team's
not
not
bad.
bad.
They are just as good. They are probably just as good
Look
as the
at how good
competitive
they are at stripping down a car and repairing it.
Nice.
They're wizards.
No, but look at Sato. I mean, Sato was having a top three run on an oval earlier this year. They usually run pretty respectably at Indy when Marias isn't crashing people. I think that I think Weldon would be a great addition to that team because if you look at it, they've got a bunch of young talent in terms of Marias, who doesn't need to be there. Sato, who's a young talent in the fact that he's young with the IndyCar series. And then you have also, EJ Viso, who I think also deserves to leave the team. Unfortunately, I don't think they can be respectable with guys like those two on there. I think Sato has had some issues this year, but again, it's his first year in IndyCar, so I mean, the car's heavy. He doesn't drive ovals. Give the dude a break. He was running better than any of the other KV drivers were on ovals, for a lot of the races earlier. So, I mean, it happens. Bring in Weldon. Cut your losses. Go from a three-car team to a two-car team. Keep Sato because of the whole Lotus deal and, he is a good driver deal. And then bring in Weldon. And then you have a good oval and a good street or decent road course and oval driver apiece. And then just go from there.
Yeah, well, you look at the way the points have shaped out this year. The guy that has the most points at said KV Racing is Mario Marias. He's at 265. EJ Viso's at 235, and Takuma is at 184. upward potential. Mario Marias has at least some upward potential compared to EJ Viso. EJ's been around a little longer, and he may be a little more polished than Mario, but I think I'd rather have Mario than him. But
Yeah.
at this point, I'd rather have neither.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, I'm going with Weldon and Sato only if I'm KV for next year.
Yeah, that would be, that would be an interesting fit there. Other than KV, well, where does Weldon go? Conquest isn't going to hire Weldon because Weldon wants a paycheck.
Yeah.
HVM, same.
None of those teams in the back.
Yeah. DeFerrin Dragon would be a location that would work well for them because they've had an emphasis on Indy. So, hey, who knows? Who knows? But
especially with Davey Hamilton. Just give that card a while, then run it full time.
I don't know how long that relationship's going to last there. I mean, maybe Davey Hamilton kind of put together the Hewlett-Packard relationship, and maybe they'll start putting that with a driver to match.
Nice.
Davey, you're not going to make a full comeback, as much as you like to tell yourself. You're a little too old for that, and it's just the way it goes. So,
yep.
Anyway, as far as the race results from Kentucky, Elio won, Ed Carpenter second, Dan Weldon third, Tony Kanaan fourth from 26th. Pretty nice.
Yeah. 10 of those in the first lap.
Yeah. Like we said, Dario was fifth. Marco Andretti was sixth. Another strong showing from Marco on an oval. I like to see that. I like Boy's to see that good. Andretti's doing well. Both, Tony and Marco in fourth and sixth. Ryan Hunter-Reay had some early problems. He spun on the first lap to avoid Takuma Sato up track. He actually did a complete Danny Sullivan-style spin and continue maneuver, and it just really didn't go well for the rest of the night for him. He ended up 21st. Graham Rahal, we talked about this. Graham Rahal ended up 20th behind Milka Duno.
Duh.
Five laps down.
Oh, suck.
Yeah, Ryan Hunter-Reay had mechanical issues that took him out of the race, so he was Graham Rahal was the last qualified runner. So that is an interesting one.
Well, let's see. So is that it for Kentucky and Panther?
Yeah, that's it for Kentucky and Panther. Like we said, Will Power's up 17 points on Dario, and we move on to the next race because really the rest of the points are meaningless.
Yeah, the race is over. Unless it's those two. Unless it's Will Power, Dario Franchitti, championship doesn't matter. Well, this week on Friday, we are going to have the announcement, finally, of the 2011 schedule, as was mentioned on the Versus broadcast this weekend.
Yes.
And we already know that the Kentucky race has been moved to, the first weekend in October this year?
Yeah, it's going to be October 2nd, and that's going to be paired with a truck series race.
Oh, go figure.
Yeah. Most likely that October 2nd date also will be a daytime event. This is only, I think, 2 or 3 years that they've been running under the lights there at Kentucky. And I really like seeing it under the lights, but October, it's getting a little chilly.
Nice.
So most likely that'll be a daytime event. The schedule that's coming out, though, they teased it on the Versus broadcast. They said that a very popular track with the fans looks like it's coming back next year.
And then they ruined it.
And then they basically announced today media invites have gone out inviting the IndyCar Series press to come to Milwaukee for the schedule announcement.
Nice. Yeah, there it have it. Way to ruin it.
The John Menards 250. I was joking with Doug about this. He's like, "How are they going to do that up there? They've got 40,000 seats and no suites."
Nice.
The track facilities are dated and everything like that. We want to see the race. We want to see it there. It's a great track. But that said, they don't have any suites, so the corporate angle is kind of hard to pull.
Yeah.
So, I said, well, they could always go like U.S. Open style and not U.S. Open. What am I thinking here? That's tennis. They could go PGA style, and they could put up those scaffolding type white tent things.
Nice.
On the hillside and, put the portable air conditioners and everything. So maybe they could do that there. Or, another option is team up with Menard because we assume that John Menard is going to be involved in the sponsorship somehow with his mega chain of home improvement stores.
Nice.
And we're thinking a tie-in with ABC, maybe Extreme Makeover close to the track, and they have a crew of a billion people descend on the track and build suites for the weekend.
Impressive. Impressive.
So yeah, I glad to see that back. It will be interesting to hear the details of this deal, because this is one that the IndyCar series said they're doing joint. They were considering doing joint promotion of Milwaukee. We don't know if that's what's going to happen, but that's what they were considering doing. So could be kind of neat to see what they came up with. Then again, it could be kind of depressing. It may be spun as, well, the IndyCar series needs ovals, and the only way they can get them is to pay for them. And that's a bad way to spin the story, but, you know, you know the Robin Millers and the Gordon Kirbys of the world are going to spin it that way.
Yeah, very much. Yep. I mean, I agree. I agree 100%. I wish it would have been... Again, we don't have all the details of what is on there, but I just wish that we had some. I just have a real problem. I have a real problem with you, like, trying to keep something a secret, and then announcing it at the track that you're trying to keep it a secret. I mean, that just doesn't do anything for you. It kills you. Okay, so here we are. We're going to have a fan favorite track on there, and everybody kind of speculates, well, it's probably Milwaukee, or is it California, or, you know, maybe they added Road America because all the fans love Road America. And then out of nowhere you say, oh, and we're going to announce it at Milwaukee. What? Okay. Yeah. So what, I mean, what the hell do I care anymore? Okay. We're going back to Milwaukee. Great. It's a great race because it has history. Sweet. I really don't care about your announcement anymore. Thanks.
Yeah. So, I mean, that brings the, yeah, who knows what the schedule fully is going to be at this point, because we don't know for sure if Las Vegas is on the schedule. It sounds like that's a done deal, because that's the one we've heard about. Bruton Smith this weekend was telegraphing that he wanted the season to end at Kentucky and then Vegas. Mm-hmm. So most likely we will end out the season next year, Motegi, Kentucky, Vegas.
Hmm.
So there's three of your ovals for next year. You also got to throw in Iowa, Indy, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's six of your ovals and one of them, New Hampshire. So there's seven ovals, and we're expecting eight. So what else am I missing there? I'm going to have to look at the schedule.
Yeah.
Basically, the schedule is the same as it was this year, except you remove you remove Kansas, you remove Homestead, you remove Chicago.
Which then sucks, because two of the three races are within attendance range for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go ahead and throw in New Hampshire. You throw in Vegas, most likely. There's still an outside chance on Fontana. Who knows what's going to happen with that. I don't see 18 races, though. I think 17 was the max number. They're saying they're going to have 17, and it sounds like Las Vegas is going to be the 17th. So as far as road courses go, it's the same as this year, except you go ahead and throw in Baltimore and take out Watkins Glen.
Nice. That sucks, too, because I like the Watkins Glen event.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting event. It's got a lot of history, but it also has a lot of Armco.
Yeah. Yep. Armco Glen.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I think we've really kind of this year hashed the crap out of the schedule, as everybody's really been kind of thinking, you know, I wonder what it's going to be. Well, you know, here it is. This is the schedule as we see it. Now, obviously, we'll have the schedule announcement covered on the site on Friday when it does happen.
Yeah, but don't expect any surprises.
But we're not going to have any earth-shattering events.
Yeah.
We're going to Hockenheim.
Yeah, Hockenheim. You know, we're going to do a doubleheader at Phoenix and then flip on over, you know, we bought Gateway, and we're going to run Gateway, and you know.
Actually, that'd be sweet.
You know, one of the things that you can point to in the downfall of IndyCar is a lot of these IndyCar tracks were sold to ISC.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain person owned a lot of those tracks. One was Roger, that one person being Roger Penske. He sold Michigan Fontana to ISC.
Mm-hmm.
And can't say that anything good's happened to those tracks since.
Yeah. Yeah. True statement. You're right.
Yeah. You know, IndyCar tried to get into the game with a joint deal with ISC to basically do the Chicagoland Speedway, and they quickly got out of that venture. It wasn't working for them. So, track ownership has been tried by the IndyCar, you know, by the IRL, and it didn't work out so well. That said, we have further evidence and proof that Homestead still sucks. Penske and Ganassi, they hitched up their trailers and made the pull to Homestead for testing this week.
Oh, boy, that's awesome. So they can win by two laps this year.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, not if Panther has anything to say about it.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
They'll actually be on the lead lap. But, yeah, they get down there, and they have a problem.
Uh-oh.
It seems that the entire backstretch is torn up at the track. They don't have a catch fence.
What?
And
was that hurricane related?
No, it was this is work we're doing related.
Oh, wow.
And the track neglected to inform the teams. Yeah, oh. By the way, don't come.
Oh, man. This is the first that I had heard of this.
Yeah.
Wow. That is why that's why Homestead is not going to be around next year.
Well, it's that it's why you don't want to be at Fontana next year. As much as I'd like to see Fontana scheduled, because it's a 2-mile oval, something yeah. other than mile and a half, you know, I would love to see it on the schedule. I would, you know, I know people are going to disagree with me. I'd prefer to see Homestead on the schedule over Las Vegas.
Oh.
The only reason being it gives diversity to the tracks. Okay. It was a crap event. You can't draw in Southern California for anything with oval track racing. Even the Laguna Seca and all that kind of stuff, they have trouble drawing to get 25,000 people to the track to see a motorcycle race. But I just want to see more diversity in the oval track schedule, and I don't want to see them remove 3.5 miles and add two back in. So
it's gonna be a tough gig. We'll have to see what they do.
Yeah,
for sure. But that's interesting on that Homestead front. I can't believe.
That's yeah, just... how do you make that decision, or how do you make that mistake? I mean, what do you do? You know, with all your Homestead Miami Facebook fans, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, Penske and Ganassi are here for a IndyCar test. We didn't tell them about the track catch fence.
Mm-hmm. Suckers.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the team should just boycott the Homestead race.
Nice. Slap to the face.
Nice. Yes, indeed. We're going to go to Cleveland instead.
Nice. That would be awesome. They could have that place ready. Maybe they could go over to Korea after Motegi and just end it on the new Korean Grand Prix track.
Yeah, seriously. Maybe it'll be done by then.
No, probably still some construction.
You know, all it takes at Burke Lakefront, you know, is just put a few cones in the parking lot.
Nice.
Got ourselves a Grand Prix.
Hey, I'll open up Gateway. We are getting ready for the NASCAR nationwide cars to come back in October. So, bring me
to the Swan Song.
Yeah, we'll do it right. We'll send this thing out the way it should.
Yeah, well... That's all we got for the world of IndyCar this evening, and now we move on to Sean's favorite word.
Yes, say it.
It's time for a rally.
Yes.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah.
Well, we had a lot of news. While only a couple big stories, a lot of revolving news around rally this week. That being, first off, the tire situation. While not a red flag situation like Formula One had, the rally series, you know, this past week, the tenders to be a supplier in the World Rally Championship for next year were due. And we don't really have a great idea of who entered, but we can definitely tell you who left as Pirelli is leaving the WRC and leaving for good. Yes, not good.
What reasons is Pirelli giving for leaving?
Well, see, this is the funny part about it. It's Pirelli's reasons that they said for leaving is because, first off, they just don't like the way the FIA does business. basically, AKA, this is basically what happened with them. Let me see, because it was a bit of a confusing spot. But what happened was they offered to, you know, supply tires. And the FIA said, okay, no. We don't really like your deal. So they had a 3-year tender that they were going to send out. That got rejected. So they're like, no 3-year deal. Because they had already known that they wanted to open up the tires for a tire war. So like, yeah, you're not going to be the sole supplier anymore. And then they said, well, okay. And then they said, but we can give you a 1-year extension on the terms, you know, that you are currently under. So we'll pay you the same kind of thing that we pay you now for an additional year. And they're like, you know, that's not great. And then they said, okay, well, better yet, how about we'll give you a 1-year deal and then give you and that will be on the new tender conditions, which are less favorable than those were in the 3-year. And basically, Pirelli is like, all right, you want to do this? Piss off. We're out. And didn't submit a tender.
Yeah, like, seriously.
We're already in Formula One. You know, we don't need to supply 2 of your series. We're already low on money. We've had, you know, to make significant cutbacks in our factories. And, you know, racing is supposed to be kind of a second nature thing kind of a second gig for us, not so much a primary means of business. And the FIA is kind of like, well, you can have F1 and you can do Rally 2, but we're not going to give you that much money for it because we're already paying you a crap load for F1. So how about them apples? And they didn't like that, so they left.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they basically told Autosport, the first point they want to make is there have been 3 significant rule changes in the last 9 months and possibly an even more significant change coming in 2012.
Yeah, what's that?
So the new rules that will apply for next year are only going to apply for a year. And then in 2012, they're going to change it again. And we've already had 3 rule changes in the last year to the tire regulations. They went on to basically say, you know, we don't feel the current regulations really – they don't think the regulations going forward are either a control tire scenario or they don't really represent competition either. So they just
– which is kind of interesting because they bit off on Formula One, no problem. And they're like, you know, how can you say that when look at Formula One regulations? They change on a daily basis.
Well – yes and no. They know in Formula One they're not going to go to some sort of funky tire war or tire skirmish, whatever.
And that in itself right there is a key thing that you just mentioned there, is they know that there will not be a tire skirmish, which is what a lot of people are crediting the Pirelli move. They're saying that Pirelli left or is going to leave Rally in fear of the competition that they would have to face, and that being, you know, a brand that stepped up right after, you know, Pirelli announced its thing, and Michelin, who makes tires with BF Goodrich branding, they're coming in and they want Michelin, not BF Goodrich, but Michelin branding on the tires. In WRC, they're like, we'll fill your gap. That's fine. We'll do it. Because we don't know how many other countries. Now, I know Total Rally said that there are three.
Are they quite certain that Michelin can make a compound that has a proper sidewall on it?
if it's anything like the Formula One debacle, I sure hope that it lasts longer than a high speed turn 13.
Oh, man.
But I think that they can do that. Basically what they're going to do is just reel. They're just going to take the BF Goodrich tires, which are already well developed and used in various other rally series, and they're going to put them Michelin stamps on them pretty much. And that's a good gig because, I don't know. No, I don't. BF Good. I Michelin's just a better name than BF Goodrich, I think, for motorsport. Granted, Goodrich does, drifting and rally, but Michelin. I mean, that just seems like a more solid kind of thing. I think it's best.
If you're going worldwide, you have to take the tire that's the worldwide platform, and I would say Michelin is a far more recognizable name than I would think BF Goodrich. People have heard it, but Michelin is well known as a tire manufacturer. And to maximize their investment, which, let's be honest, this is an investment. It's why Pirelli left. Pirelli had made an investment in making these control tires. They wanted to continue using the same tires that they had been instead of going forward and making the new compounds and specs. Probably part of the biggest part of the reason they didn't want to do it is because they didn't want to go through the R&D and the significant cost in a kind of weird, unstable rules environment where, it isn't exactly competition, it isn't exactly control, it's kind of a meld of the two. And it's been showed, they complained that they saw it in GT racing, the same type of rule scenario, and it didn't work. So I don't know, man. I don't
Well,
know.
apparently Michelin has already started testing its WRC tire that they want to use for next year. They're already testing it on a Peugeot 307 WRC car with Stefan Sarrazin at the wheel. So
Well, that's
that being
good. I mean,
reported by Autosport.
yeah, it's good of the FIA though to wait to the last minute to decide what they're doing for tires in WRC next year. It smacks of just extreme arrogance that you can sit there and dictate to these companies at the last minute what their rules for the next season are going to be. I mean, it's like right now just deciding, oh, 1.6 turbo stand, that's really not what we want. We want 1.7.
Nice. That would piss a lot of people off.
See, it's not really, or 1.5. You can do it. You just have to short the crankshaft, or not the crankshaft, but the piston rods. Well, yeah, we can do it. Yeah, it's no problem. We just have to change a little bit in the engine. But
Yes.
what? Oh, jeez, what a
Well,
mess.
and some other. You still talking tires?
Go ahead. No, I'm
All
off
right.
tires. Go ahead.
All right. Because in other news, we have some big news reportedly. Reportedly, I want to emphasize that there hasn't been anything official. Granted, Autosport seems to think it's got an official line on it. But it would look as though Chris Meek is going to move from the IRC and the Peugeot UK team to ProDrive to drive one of the new minis, possibly alongside PG Anderson, who is reportedly already signed. Actually, Total Rally also said that PG's SWRC team is looking for somebody to race for them in France, in that car usually inhabited by Anderson, but they said because they think that he is about to sign or has already signed with ProDrive and Dave Richards. And the reason they would need a new driver is if he signs with ProDrive, he's not allowed to drive any other car until that happens, until that car comes online. So,
Interesting.
yeah. So, we're kind of looking around at that. Not really sure. Again, the Meek thing is reportedly happening. Autosport thinks they have some kind of source that says, close to ProDrive, that says the deal with Chris is done. And Now, the reason they're looking at having Meek is because he is a British driver for a British Pro Drive and a British Mini car, and they're thinking that Mini UK is dropping a crap ton of money, and they want a British driver in that car. So,
and IRC fanboys scream, no!
Yes, no kidding. Well, luckily they have the Skoda boys, if anybody, because they'll have, Guy Wilkes and, Kopecky and all them. But, and it also said in that same Autosport article that Peugeot UK is known to have contacted drivers about replacing Meek in its IRC program.
Ooh, interesting.
It may be that even
if it doesn't pan out with Meek at Mini, there may be some other teams that are looking at him for next season, maybe in SWRC efforts or what have you.
Well, I mean, if you look at the way he's performed this year in the IRC, it's just been atrocious. I mean, he's DNF'd. He's DNF'd all but like two rallies. So.
No, but that's all. You know, that's all Peugeot's fault.
Well, it's Skoda's fault because
it's everybody else's fault.
Oliver.
He's gonna leave.
Oliver Cunnell is tired of Skoda having a factory effort. And now
I tell you.
he's throwing his toys out of the pram. but that's not all. That is not all in the Mini camp. Mini's making a lot of waves this week because it is now Marcus Grönholm is going to test the Mini Countryman WRC S2000T in Portugal. If you remember, Portugal was the last race in 2009 when Marcus signed up with ProDrive to drive their WRX, whatever that is, WRX, WRC. And he was running P4, actually, in the race before clipping a tree and retiring. But the reason that they're looking at him, now this is the weird thing about it. He wants to test the car, and then after the test, he will see whether or not he will want to actually drive for the team next year. So he's actually talking about coming out of retirement to drive for this team. Which makes an interesting situation because then you think, well, then if he comes out, obviously ProDrive would sign him. If he was interested, and then, who would it be? Piggy, or would it be Chris Meek driving in the other? Or, Total Rally brought up a good point, could they be in all three next year, have all three of them next year, because the team is not eligible for the championship next year because they're missing the first four rounds.
Okay.
So now they're allowed to run as many cars as they want. Because accumulating points.
But they are accumulating data.
Yes, data. But they can run three cars if they want.
That is an interesting scenario.
Yes.
And one that might just play out.
It may. And it's looking as though... but at the moment, Grönholm's not happy. Because he wants more money if he's going to do this. And apparently, Manny's like... Yo, we just came back in this. We don't have that kind of money. So, chill, dude. But we'll see what happens, I guess. I'm not really sure.
Well, you know how David Richards is. He always likes to talk about what they're thinking about doing, but not necessarily that they're going to put anything down. It's kind of like his F1 bids and everything of that nature.
Yeah. And we know he's cheap ass too, so.
Yeah, seriously. Next year, we're looking at hiring Michael Schumacher to drive for us.
But we're not going to pay him.
You know, as long as he comes in at a reasonable rate, we can maybe do that.
Yes. Well, one of the things also in the world of rally, that's enough for the Mini stuff. We could really go on all day with Mini. He said, she said, who's going to be in the car. But to be 100% honest... we just don't know right now. But what we do know in a separate story is that Jari Matti Latvala, who is now apparently Ford's preferred driver of choice, is going to be driving a monster World Rally car. Yes, the same car that Ken Block drives at a little exhibition at the, what is that, Wiltshire Castle Combe Circuit.
Interesting.
Yes, so I don't know if Block maybe wasn't available, or I don't really understand the reasoning behind Yari Matty driving this car, but, you know, maybe it's because it's on tarmac and he knows how to drive on tarmac, and maybe the guys at the Wiltshire didn't want hooning.
But, you know, in his comment about the thing, he says, I hope I can put on a really good show for the fans with lots of sideways action.
Uh-oh. There'll be hooning.
There will be hooning.
I don't understand why Ken Block's not doing this. Must be an obligation someplace.
Well, you know, when you're a very wealthy tennis shoe mogul, or skate shoe mogul, as I should say, you know, these sorts of things happen. He probably has a black tie event that he has to attend.
Nice. Speaking of which, he just released a new shoe inspired by his WRC livery, and they're pretty sweet. They're high tops, and I think I want them.
Does it have a rap video?
I hope not. God, I hope not. September 14th, mark the day on your calendar. That is the day in which Gymkhana 3 Part 2 will come out, which we have been assured by Ken himself.
Shall be hoonalicious.
It will be what we expect from him, and no more of this rap.
A hoonstravaganza.
Yes. Yes. So we'll look forward to that, obviously, because it's the real deal. But that's that's what we've got going on right now out of that. There's actually a race this weekend.
Oh, yes.
We're indeed going to your favorite event on the calendar, Japan.
I just have to say that I really like the Japan events in dirt. And, I think this is fairly different, though. Is this the same stages that they ran in dirt or not? No. I don't think it is.
I don't think so, but they are kind of similar in the sense that they are they have extremely, the best way to describe them is they're really, really soft tarmac, soft with stones, and they are slick. So you may actually – it may be kind of a similar feeling to dirt actually because of it. And not to mention, I mean, obviously Japan prone to rain all the time. So but this weekend, Rally Japan, and we have no Japanese manufacturers represented. So –
yeah, that's pretty sad, especially with such major Japanese manufacturers, Honda, Toyota, you know, Subaru to a lesser extent as far as size, but certainly
Rally,
with reputation. Reputation and Rally, you would still expect them to be represented at a manufacturer level, not just a enthusiast, privateer level.
Exactly. And Mitsubishi.
Yeah, Mitsu is kind of hard for me to see how they're not involved. And, you know, you can even go down the line to Nissan, which really is kind of Renault, but still Nissan holds its roots in Japan.
So. But, yeah, kind of depressing, but at the same time, you know, not a lot we can really do about it. I hate to say it, but it's probably just not going to happen right now. But I guess we will have them to a lesser extent, like you said, in the other classes. So, but, let's see, let's make some predictions as Loeb can win the championship here if everybody else crashes out or finishes lower than I think 7th is what they said.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Have fun with that. That's not going to happen. And they think that they're going to hold out.
Oh, excuse me.
in an attempt to win in France, obviously. Because I think France is after that. And if you're Ken Block, why would you not want to win in France? So, yeah. It's really sad when you can just start toying with the field like three or four races out of the end of the year and you're literally toying with people. Like, I guess I could win here. Or I could, or I could win in France. Yeah.
Seriously, I mean, it doesn't really even matter at this point.
No.
You know, so the results, Shelby, Kimi Räikkönen with the win.
No. Real about that.
Loeb.
Yeah.
How can I not say that?
Yari Matty.
Unless Loeb crashes, he will win the event. If he does crash,
Yari Matty.
Yari Matty.
I'm actually voting for him.
Maybe Sordo in a bold move to celebrate his departure from Citroën and move to Ford.
Nice.
He'll take the event.
Nice.
There's the flash of brilliance that we haven't seen this year, Danny.
All right. Well, that is it for the world of rally, to be honest. Not a whole lot more going on in the WRC. We'll just have to look and wait. But, yeah, it's just not overly great this year. In terms of the end of the year championship, no things like we had last year with what's his name? Hirvonen. Yeah, that's it. What's his name? Because he's fallen off the face of the earth.
From obviously. Supreme fanboy to what's his name?
Yeah.
How did this happen, Sean?
I'm crushed, man. He built me up at the beginning of the year, and then he dropped me on my head.
Yeah, seriously.
So I was like, oh, man, look at him take Monte Carlo. This dude is, okay. Yeah, he should have done that because the IRC talent is garbage. But then he gets into the, Sweden, and then he wins Sweden. And I'm like, wow, this guy's got really a chance. And then out of left field, and crash, and blow up, and crash, and blow up. I'm like, what the hell? Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that looks like the end to our World of Rally discussion, and we shall jump into Formula One and briefly go through the highlights of the lowlights that are Formula One. First on the list, there's a World Motorsport Council meeting this Friday. Mark it on your calendar so you can wait Thursday and have your RSS feeds polluted by endless speculation as to what the World Motorsport Council is going to decide on Ferrari. But that's not all they're going to be announcing. I think we're going to actually hear about the 13th team on Friday. And I think we're going to hear some more about Korea on Friday. The 13th team is an interesting one. Speculation's already coming out. The guys over at Auto Evolution, who have a pretty good blog if you've never seen it, they are rumoring that the FIA shall decide not to fill the 13th spot on the grid.
Well, that'll be interesting. I don't understand why, because doesn't Epsilon Escudo like pretty much have a car in the tunnel? Didn't they like buy the Toyota or something like that?
Yeah, seriously. No, they didn't buy the Toyota. I think they bought a Force India model from Aerolab
and
threw it into their wind tunnel.
Nice. We got this here thing that we've had for a while on sale. What do you want us to do with this? Yeah. We'll take it.
It's not a Force India. Put a walrus nose on it.
Nice.
Put some Viking wings and a couple of tusks off the side. And woo, it's our car. What it sounds like is only three teams were able to come up with the cash that was necessary that the FIA and the FOM were requiring. These teams had to put up something on the order of 16 million British pounds to even be considered.
Nice.
Now, I don't know if that means a bond or they actually just had to write a check. And that's just a whole heap of a lot of money just to even be considered. And, you know, those teams were Villeneuve, Epsilon, and the Cypher Group. And I think the Cypher Group has pulled out, haven't they?
Yeah, Cypher pulled out weeks or a couple months ago.
So really it does come down to Villeneuve and Epsilon. And Epsilon's the only actual racing. Well, Villeneuve is tied in with Durango, I guess. But they're a non-competitive GP2 team. So I don't see this going great places, especially when you're waiting until September to announce who's going to be on the grid next March.
Nice. I say you have to give it to Epsilon, if anybody, because they're ready for the wind tunnel.
Yeah.
So they say, with a model.
So they say, yeah. As we talked about, I believe it was last week, you know, Epsilon has to do all they can to show that they're making progress towards designing a car with all the while saving the most amount of money possible. So basically put up the least amount of capital to show the most amount of, you know, intellectual property, but you know, big cardboard fronts, or you know, kind of like the old west towns that were all facades because they were movie sets and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
I'm thinking that's what's going on at Epsilon right now.
Well, Herman Tilke, he had a conversation.
Well,
he answered.
Let's get into a couple other things with the World Motorsport Council. Also on Friday, we're going to hear about Ferrari and what kind of treatment the FIA is going to give them for...
Which we know is not going to be anything.
Yeah, you know, everybody wants to wax poetic on this, but they're not gonna harm the championship. They'll take constructor points. They're not going to take championship points. If they do, you know, you can say that I'm a blowhard that doesn't know what he's talking about, and that would be fine because I'm just an armchair fan.
Nice.
Well, but I think you and I agree that's the most likely scenario.
Yeah. And then you say that they may discuss on Korea or not. If you watch the video that Autosport had, or it's on YouTube, of Karun Chandhok tooling around that track, it
was
the very fact that they are even entertaining the idea of still trying to run a race on that track is embarrassing.
Was that Korea or was that the bootleg at Bahrain?
Nice. Yeah. It was sandy and dirty. And in fact, it was not a racetrack. It looked like he wandered out to like some random road and just started flying around in an old school road, Red Bull, F1 car. So yeah, that track looks like crap.
Supposedly the tarmac is laid and, they've ran a car on it. Now the fact is that it doesn't just take tarmac to make a racetrack, nor does it just take tarmac to have the safety in place to make a racetrack. It does sound like the FIA will be breaking their own rules if they do go here, because supposedly they're supposed to do track inspections, you know, like, like months in advance to approve a circuit. And it would appear that they're breaking their own rules to do this. Now, that said, they did the same thing for the Brazil, the Sao Paulo IndyCar race, because that was also a concern at the time. But the FIA did scout the track given the construction schedule. They're actually being flexible on things like that, which is interesting because they're never flexible on their motorsport competition rules. They're only flexible on rules when it's convenient.
Yes. Well, we'll see what happens. So I guess we could be short one race or maybe not, but it'll have implications nonetheless. So in the championship, if they decide to short the teams a race. So,
yeah.
Who knows? All right, so Tilke, he had an interview, and he also released an Austin layout, obviously, that he, you know, that they are going to use to build. We talked about it before. It looks pretty interesting. But Tilke says that these kinds of tracks, such as Austin, are now things that we can start to expect because he is going to go forward and push the envelope in track development and no longer use his really crappy Tilke neutered chicanes at the end of every straightaway.
Jeez. I just love this. Herman Tilke, quote, "I have discussed a lot of things, and a lot of good ideas came from Bernie Ecclestone. He has a good view on it. Now we are going much more on the edge than we have for some years in terms of elevation and the types of corners we have." Oh, really? So it was Bernie that was telling you how to design these tracks?
Yeah, right. You must have a chicane at every corner.
Yeah. I think Bernie wants what's best for Formula One. It's just that sometimes he doesn't get it.
I don't know about
seriously,
that.
You know, I think Bernie would prefer to have better tracks than he gets, but I think the FIA has far more say in track design than Bernie Ecclestone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Bernie, you know, I don't know. The track, whatever, I don't know, but whatever they've been doing, they need to change it because all the new tracks are garbage that they've released. Turkey yes. has been about the only one that's come out on top. China sucks. Where else has he designed? He did Singapore, right?
Yeah, he did Singapore.
And Singapore sucks.
He did Valencia.
Yeah, well, that speaks for itself. That's garbage. Yeah. That's the worst one of them all.
Yeah, Malaysia's a decent track.
Malaysia's all right, but it's not the same. It's not the same kind of normal Tilke garbage.
Yeah, yeah. So Bahrain. Like you said, China, Turkey.
Yeah, Bahrain just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, it's just sad to see these Tilke drones, these Tilke abominations taking the place of places like San Marino. People will complain that, well, you couldn't pass at San Marino. Oh, so you replaced it with what?
Yeah, you passed it with another.
Yeah, seriously.
Know, yeah.
Tilke no abomination.
Yeah, exactly. Tilke abomination.
You look at the USGP track layout for Austin. Now, let's just say this is a very pretty drawing. But until we see construction equipment, finish work at said track, we're not going to be too sure about its placement on the schedule. But that said, the track layout looks nice.
That looks all right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm certainly not an anti-track layout guy on this one. Some decent elevation change. Very interesting first corner with a lot of elevation gain going into the first hairpin. Mm-hmm. Pretty sweet looking.
Yep. Well, what else is on the docket in terms of F1?
Oh, not much. I think that Kobayashi's going to Sauber.
Yeah, he's going to stay with Sauber. Pedro De La Rosa, maybe not so much.
Yeah. As we pretty much have heard many, many times, people aren't happy with F1. Everybody in F1 complains about how F1 is ran. One person complains that you just don't have any fans in the seats anymore. Well, part of the reason for that is the ticket prices are 600 euros a piece or whatever it comes out to.
And the product sucks.
Yeah, the product has been okay this year. I mean, let's be blunt. The product hasn't been awful. It's been much worse.
Oh, it has before, yeah, but it's not been. I don't think compared. I think the finishes have made the points championship good, which is what we were hoping for. That the championship would be good with all the drivers they have, but I don't think the on the track racing between all said drivers has been great.
Fair enough. The points championship at least is interesting, and that's making up for the fact that the races have been a bit dull at times, helped certainly by, safety cars and weather.
Yeah.
But Whitmarsh came out and said his views on this, that F1 has to get its act together, and this is an article from Autosport, basically talking about, well, bluntly, the current Concorde Agreement ends in 2012. The teams have been working as a group in FOTA for some time. They're coming up with their own conceptions of what needs to happen. A lot of it is the teams need to make more money off of F1, and the other part of it is that the FOM needs to spend money actually marketing F1 instead of just forcing it onto the teams to do all the marketing for the series.
Yep.
or forcing it upon the tracks to do all the marketing for the series. In the end, FOM makes a lot of money, takes it in, and it doesn't really put much back into the sport. At least that's the view of FOTA, who Whit Marsh is speaking for. Interesting, because there are a lot of things that kind of come out in this article, and one of them is, you know, talking about the future possibilities of a breakaway championship. And they brought it up because you're talking about 2013 when the new Concorde should supposedly come in. And basically, you know, Whit Marsh says, you know, we need stability. We need to be able to make a Concorde agreement that lasts 4 or 5 years. And we need that Concorde agreement to have rule stability that we can bank on instead of, you know, having fluctuations in the rules and everything of that nature.
Yeah.
On a consistent basis, as we see in F1, as we see as Pirelli got sick of in WRC.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen in just one FIA sanctioned series. They said, you know, he basically said, we don't rule out the possibility of a breakaway series, but we think it's a bad idea. So we need to come together and negotiate, or else it's possible. I think everybody's going to be rattling and making their cases known. But that said, you know, some articles also came out this week about what the possible engine package is going to be. And they're talking about 1.6 liter inline four cylinder turbo engines.
Oh boy.
Talking about getting up to about 650 horsepower from the engine, as well as onboard energy recovery stuff. They're talking about ground effects coming back, which I see as a positive for F1.
Oh yeah. Anything to help with the lack of overtaking, and I think ground effects could do that.
Yeah, certainly. They're talking about taking more of the downforce from the diffuser instead of the wing, which is already Lilliputian on the back, so why not just get rid of it? Because really, that's what it's going to be like. You're going to have a one-element rear wing that's about 2 inches wide. That'll be exciting.
Oh, of course. It'll make all the difference in the overtaking and everything. The show will be better because of this, and it will look just as good as that giant abomination that was last year's front wing that had no character to it whatsoever. But I'm excited about the I'm excited about the prospect of having ground effects and turbochargers. I think that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah.
If you remember Formula One, you know, obviously you remember better than any, you know, Formula One in its heyday, turbochargers, ground effects. I mean, those were characteristics of Formula One in its golden age, if you will.
Yeah, certainly. That was the era in Formula One when the technology you could put in the car was getting to the point where it was unsafe to drive them.
Yeah, which is what people want to see.
Certainly it's what people want to see, but it kind of marked the end of an era, because the development in motorsport had gotten to such a point that you could put extremely unsafe cars out on track. And they had to start bringing in these regulations as far as engine regs and all that kind of stuff. You know, it just got to the point where you had to create, you know, such a confined environment for development, because if you didn't, you'd be going way too fast on these circuits.
Oh yeah. I mean, they've done just so many, the engineering has been ridiculous. I mean, even at this point, you know, the cars are half what they used to be, and they're nearly putting the same kinds of times as they did before they tried to make all the changes to slow them down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see which direction the cars go. A lot of people were almost quoting saying they were going to go in IndyCar style. I don't know what that means, but surely that doesn't mean, you know, a standard tub or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what that article was talking about, but I don't think that's what we're looking at here. I think we're looking at a little more sophistication.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Now, If they do go that route, you know, Ferrari's basically said, we're not too keen on a four-cylinder engine because we don't do those.
No, we don't. But we don't make those things.
And if the FIA comes out and says there's going to be a common tub, I think Ferrari says we don't do those.
And we go to Le Mans.
Yeah, seriously. They've already rattled their sabers on that one, and I can't imagine them not just stepping out on that. So. Could be interesting to see what actually ends up happening in 2013, but that's far enough away that we really don't have to worry about it.
Nope.
And we're far more excited about the new IndyCar chassis, so we'll just deal with that when it comes.
And as you mentioned, Kobayashi did sign with Sauber. Yep.
So yes, indeed.
We're done with that. As he rightfully should, and I hope Pedro De La Rosa gets the door.
So Mazza.
Yes. Shall be an interesting race. Where are you going to go with it?
Oh, I think it's going to be kind of hard to go against Lewis Hamilton this weekend.
Yeah, I don't think Ferrari's going to have what it takes. It's going to be – now, concern on the F-duct, some say yes, some say no, some say why wouldn't you? So that'll be interesting to see if that has any kind of effect on who is running it and who doesn't.
Yeah.
That will be interesting to see.
Weather looks good for this weekend. Looks like everything is going to be nice and sunny and right across the board, 25 degrees Celsius. So it should be nice weather this weekend. Yeah, no chance of rain. That would really make Monza a very nice race. Very nice.
That would make it a. I would then have to go with a Toro Rosso prediction. No, but be that as it may. I say, all right, what do I feel? This isn't necessarily an educated pick. I feel as though it will be a Mark Webber. I just have this feeling that Mark Webber is going to win.
Yeah, that would be a coup for Red Bull if Mark Webber could win, because this is kind of the last of the tracks that suit other cars better than the Red Bull.
Yeah,
we get on the rest of the series. Red Bull looks much better at the remaining tracks. And
Flexi wing.
Yeah, Flexi wing.
I want a Flexi wing for the Mazda.
Yeah, you know, going forward, Singapore is low speed corners. Japan, it's a good mixture, but it has a lot of low speed corners. Perfect for Red Bull. Korea, who knows?
Yeah, that'll be a crapshoot.
Korea may just be a black spot on the schedule. You may tune in for the Korea race and see, you know, 1978, you know, Grand Prix of Belgium.
Nice. That'd be awesome. I'd much rather watch that.
Yes. Yeah, Brazil and Abu Dhabi still remain Abu Dhabi. Had such potential.
I like that track.
I like that track, except for the neuterment.
Neuterment, yeah. Had they left the neutering alone, it would have been brilliant. But that, you know, aside of that one point, I mean, I think it's a great track. I think it's beautiful there.
Yeah, they certainly did an excellent job with that. And the Twilight Race is an interesting play on the series. But yes, it could be worse. You know, they don't. Well, they didn't race at Hockenheim this year, did they?
Hockenheim. Hockenheim. I don't think they raced Nürburg.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Neuterheim. Yes.
Nice. Oh, Tilke.
Yeah, Tilke. I think that's pretty much all we have for tonight. The fascination with F1 is down once more this week.
Yes.
And it's fast drifting towards obscurity.
Yes. As unfortunate as that is.
Well, obviously F1 is very important around the world, and it's just not very exciting to follow F1 right now. I mean, it's an interesting points race, like we talked about, but the racing is varied, and the rules making body They continue to do some wacky stuff.
Yep.
So
I agree. Not fun.
Not fun. So we'll stick with IndyCar. We got Motegi coming up. Something to look forward to.
Yep. And some sweet results out of Rally Japan. Don't forget to hit WRC.com or the WRC iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android app now.
Yes. That.
And you can actually listen to the rally live via WRC Radio, which is actually brilliant because they are very good at it.
Yep, that's certainly the case. And get some sweet tunes between interviews.
Yeah, they play good music. So, all right, well, everybody enjoy the week. That's all we have for tonight, as Mike said. So thanks a lot for listening, and join us next week as we hash out all of this up and coming week's ends. Races. So that was a bit of a tongue twister there for me. So, yep, but we'll talk about all the things next week on Tuesday. So that's all we have. Say goodbye, Mike.
Good night.
Good night.